Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you all for coming. So this is joint work. So the presentation today will be based on joint work that I started with Daryl Duffy, and someone already pointed out there is a typo here. And then later we developed the model more with Gaston Giroux and Semyon Malamud. Okay, so what's the question, what's the idea we're trying to study here? We're trying to understand how information gets aggregated into prices in the market. So information that's initially dispersed among agents in the economy, how do they translate into prices over time? So this is a very old idea. It goes back at least to Hayek in 1945, who talks about the informational role of prices. He says, he just describes beautifully the example of an economy, I think it's France, where you have different corners of this economy, and there are shocks in these corners of this economy. But he says that the price system incorporates this information immediately. So if there is any information that's specific to some neighborhood of this economy, you don't need to be there to see it and learn about it. The price system will work to incorporate and summarize that information, and all the agents in the economy can then benefit from the information that is contained in price. So this idea was later formalized by Grossman and Grossman-Stiglitz in the notion of rational expectations equilibrium, where they have investors who submit demands, but they can condition their demands on the price. So basically they observe the price, they learn all the information that is contained in the price, and they can use that in order to form their demands. Okay, there are several paradoxes related to this concept. So it's a Varasian market. We don't know exactly how prices reach equilibrium. And another paradox is the prices are fully revealing in this model. So, but if prices are fully revealing, why do investors have incentives to collect information? But then if investors don't collect any information, how come prices can be fully revealing? So the model has some drawbacks, partly because the mechanism through which trade happens is not fully specified. So there are attempts to justify this notion of equilibrium introduced by Grossman and Grossman-Stiglitz. And for the most part, they focus on centralized exchanges. So they have models of auctions where there are multiple investors participating in an auction, and it's clear what the protocol for trading is. So it's just the rules of the auction. And these investors will submit their bids in an auction. So what this paper shows is that if you make the number of investors participating in an auction goes to infinity, the price will converge to the price that is predicted by the model by Grossman and Grossman-Stiglitz. Okay, there are some technical assumptions. Different papers have different technical assumptions. The result holds for the most part. There are some specific cases in which it doesn't hold. So today we're going to focus on a different kind of market. We're not going to focus on centralized exchanges. We're going to focus on over-the-counter markets. Okay, so what are these? So a lot of financial contracts or securities are traded not in a centralized exchange. They are traded in over-the-counter markets. So these are decentralized markets in which transactions happen through private bilateral negotiations. Okay, I make a phone call. I want to buy a CDS. I make a phone call to some CDS dealer. He quotes me. He gives me a quote, and I decide whether to buy or not. But only me and the person I'm negotiating with observe the bids in this contract. So there is no centralized price that all agents in the economy can observe. Okay, so this is true for a lot of financial, for a lot of derivatives. It's also true in for example, real estate markets, where they're, in essence, decentralized markets. So they're important markets. And given the importance of this type of market, there has been very little work. So there is an early paper by Walensky, one paper by Bluan Serrano, and another paper by Golozov, Lorenzon, and Klinsky. And these papers, what they do is they show convergence over time to some rational expectation equilibrium. as predicted by Grossman and Grossman-Stiglitz. They use Martingale convergence theorem to show that in the long run the prices will converge to the rational expectations equilibrium. However, they cannot say anything about short-run dynamics, and that's exactly what we're going to exploit today. So in my work with Dado and the other two co-authors that joined later, we basically provide closed-form solutions for the evolution of cross-section beliefs and prices in these markets. Because so in these markets, there is not just a single price, because there are several transactions happening at the same time, bilateral transactions. There is a different prices at the same time for the same security. So there is a dispersion of price in the economy. So we basically characterize in closed form how this dispersion of prices will evolve over time, and how quick it's going to converge to the rational expectations equilibrium. And we also study the value of information and connectivity in this market. What's the idea here? Because price, it takes some time for price to converge to the rational expectations equilibrium. What happens is that if I'm an informed agent from the beginning in this economy, I can make profits using my superior information when trading with other agents. So we characterize the value of information in this market. And sometimes we show that you can even be a negative effect. So being an informed agent can actually hurt you in this market for the reasons I'm going to explain in the talk. So here is the outline for the talk today. First, I'm going to focus on the model of information percolation without giving you specific details about the market mechanism through which trades occur. Okay? So then I'm going to talk about this trade protocol. So when two agents meet, how do they transact? So I'm going to introduce this double auction, which has previously been used in the auctions literature. So the trade is going to happen through this double auctions when both sides will submit some bids, and the trade will clear if the buyer's bid is greater than the seller's ask. Okay, but for the first part, I'm not going to talk anything about this trading mechanism. It's going to become clear here. And then I'm going to look at the value of connectedness and information in this market. Okay, so here are the model primitives. So a lot of these assumptions can be generalized, and we've done that in subsequent papers. I'm going to present you with the simple version of the model. So we have a continuum of agents. There are two possible states of nature. So the economy can be in two states, either zero or one, and these states will matter for the payoff of the security that's being traded later on. So agents would like to know which state the economy is. So they start with some common prior about which state we are at, and they get signals. So each of these agents will get a set of signals that gives them information about what's the state of the economy. So they start with some priors. They will receive some signals that are informative about whether we are in state zero and state one. Each of them will receive different signals. And they will then update their beliefs. Okay? So the signals are assumed to be Y-conditionally independent, and that simplifies the updating, the Bayesian updating that I'm going to introduce in the next slide. So this is how the agents start in this economy. Now, over time, they will be matched in a continuous time model with a Poisson arrival process. So for each agent, the arrival of the next meeting happens, is exponential with intensity lambda. So each agent is going to be meeting other agents over time. And for each agent, the next meeting is coming with intensity lambda. And then when he meets, he has his opportunity to trade, and he's going to meet again, other agents in the future. Okay. Sorry? So this is just the precision of the signal. This is precision of the signal that you an agent J observes. Okay, so the signal is informative if it is inequality, is a strict inequality. That means that when I observe a signal 1, it's more likely that I am in state y equals 1 than in state y equals 0. So that tells me something about the true state, and then that allows me to do the updating. It's just going to be a Bayesian updating that I'm going to do in the next slide. Okay, so just let's look at the problem of a single agent at time 0 when he gets this endowment of signals, S equals S1 through Sn. Well, we're going to work not on the space of posterior directly. We're going to work on the log likelihood ratio of this agent. That simplifies the Bayesian updating. So basically, the agent's going to form, if he observes n signals, he's going to form posteriors about which state we are. He's going to form a posterior that we're in state 1 and a posterior that we are in state 0. We're going to take the log of the ratio of these posteriors. And Bayes' rule will tell us that the log likelihood ratio of the posteriors is equal to the log likelihood ratio of the prior that the agent enters this economy plus the sum of the log likelihood ratios of the signals that the agent has observed. Okay? So what's the idea here? Suppose you observe a completely uninformative signal. Well, that means that this ratio is equal to 1. Log of 1 is 0. You don't move your posterior. So if the signal is uninformative, that doesn't affect your posterior. If the signal is very informative, then this ratio will be either very close to plus infinity or close to minus infinity. That's going to move you a lot in your posterior here. Okay, so why do we work under this log likelihood ratio? We're going to show in the next slide that gives us a linearity that makes the problem tractable in terms of updating. Okay, and it's very easy then to convert back from the log likelihood ratio to the posterior itself. It's just a one-to-one mapping and a strictly increasing mapping. So if the log likelihood ratio is minus infinity or close to minus infinity, that means that the agent is very confident that the true state is y equals 0. If the log likelihood ratio is close to plus infinity, that means that the agent is very confident that the true state is y equals 1. Okay, we're going to call the type associated with a set of signals theta, which is just the sum of the log likelihood ratio of the signals that were observed. And that's just a definition. Now, as I said in the beginning, when the agents meet, they will participate in a double auction, and they will submit bids. I'm going to talk in details about this double auction. But the important property that we need to calculate the dynamics here is that the bids that the agents submit in this double auction are strictly increasing in the type of the agent when he enters the auction. So if the bids that the agent submits are strictly increasing in this type, when I see a bid of a counterparty in this market, I can invert his bid and I learn his type precisely. And then I can use his type to do the Bayesian updating and vice versa. The counterparty is seeing a bid that I submit. He can invert my bid, get my type, and do the updating. And the updating will work in the following way. It's just going to be Bayesian updating. So suppose two agents meet at any point in time in this model, and suppose that one agent has observed the set of signals S that has a type theta associated with it, and suppose that another agent has observed the set of signals R that has a type phi associated with it. So what's going to be their types after they meet if they participate in this auction and they submit a strictly increasing bid? Well, their types are just going to be the sum of the types at which they enter the auction. So how does it work? Suppose that I don't observe only the bid of the counterparty, but I observe the whole sequence of signals that this counterparty has observed. Basically, I observe all the information that this other counterparty had. So that's how I would form my log likelihood ratio of my posteriors in this case. So I would be able to condition not only on the sum of types, but I would be able to condition on each signal individually that I have observed and each signal that my counterparty has observed. But I don't need those signals, actually. So when I form my posterior here, I'm going to just have the log likelihood ratio of my prior plus plus theta plus psi, which is this type associated with the signals S. Theta is the type associated with the signals S, and psi is the type associated with the signals R. So this type summarizes all the information that is needed for me that's contained in the signal set R. So I only need to know psi, and I don't need to know the realizations of each of these signals in order to form my posterior in this model. Okay, so this works for two states. It's general. So for any finite, if you have finite number of states, you can easily write that equation. It's going to be just a sum of log likelihood ratios, as Bayes rule suggests. The only issue is that the types will be multidimensional. So if you have n finite states, you need n minus one dimensional type in order to do the update. Okay, so this is true then if this is the first meeting for agent 1 and 2 that are meeting, but it's also true in the follow-on meetings. And you can just apply an induction argument to make this claim. So by induction, we can prove that this property of additivity holds for any subsequent meetings of types. And this here it helps that we have a continuum of agents, because I only meet, so the probability that I'm meeting the same agent again is zero, because the other agent is randomly drawn uniformly from the rest of the population. So I meet one agent. The next agent that I meet is not going to be the same one that I've met in the past, and he's not going to have met anyone that I have met, the previous agent in the past, because I have only finite number of meetings, and I have a continuum of agents in the economy. Okay, so this gives us all the tractability that we need, because now when two agents meet, we just have to add their types, and the dynamics is going to be very simple because we just keep adding types. So basically, we can write, so let mu zero be the measure associated with the initial distribution of types in this economy. So this is given just by the initial signal endowment. So you provide signals to these agents. They're going to use Bayesian updating, and they're going to have a distribution of types mu zero, which of course depends on the underlying state of the economy. If the state is one, you're going to have one mu zero that is shifted to the right, because most of the signals will be showing that, oh, most likely the state is one. And if you have in the case y equals zero, you have a distribution that has most of its weight on the left. But this distribution mu zero can be easily computed just from the initial signal endowments that you give to the agents. Now, how do this mu zero evolve? Well, each of these agents will be engaging in these bilateral meetings with other agents. And when they meet, we just need to add their types. And that's how this measure is going to evolve over time. So that's what this Boltzmann equation here represents. So this is how the mu t, the distribution of types at time t, changes in a given instant in time. So that's the intuition for this equation. So basically what happens is that at each instant in time, a fraction lambda of the population gets removed. The types, their original types gets removed because they meet other agents, and they get replaced with a new type, which is just the sum of their current types. So this is a convolution operator. So you just convolute the measure with itself, because this the fraction lambda of agents is meeting, and when two agents meet, they both leave the meeting with the sum of their own types. Okay, so this is the equation. Here's a convolution operator. We figure out later, when we're presenting the first paper, that this is a particular case of the Boltzmann equation to study thermodynamics. So the idea there in physics is that you have molecules, and the state here is the velocity of each of these, velocity vector for each of these molecules. And when they collide, they go in different directions. So there is a kernel operator there that updates. When there is a collision, this operator here will tell how to output. So if you have an input with like a given vector of different directions, it will tell what the output should be. So depending on how you collide, you're going to have a new velocity vector. So this equation can be more generally applied for models where there is local interactions. And here we have a model with local interactions, which is this over-the-counter market in which transactions happen bilaterally. However, so we're lucky here that the kernel that we have is a much simpler kernel than the kernel that has been used in physics for thermodynamics. There you have at least a two-dimensional kernel, and it's a more complicated operation depending on the angle at which these molecules will hit each other. Here we don't have that problem. Our kernel operator is simply a convolution operator, and that's what allows us to deal with this problem and becomes a very tractable problem. We don't have to appeal to numerical methods, which is the common way of solving this problem in physics. Yeah. Because the base rule will tell us that when two agents meet, you just add their types. Okay, so this is from the previous slide, from the previous proposition. So Bayes' rule has this nice feature of if you work on the log likelihood ratio space, you just keep adding log likelihood ratios. So the additivity comes from there. Okay, so this is the solution. So we can actually solve in closed form for the distribution of types in the population at each point in time t. It's just a wild summation, so it's a wild sum because in physics this was Wild was the first one to point out that you can actually write the complicated Boltzmann, the solution to the Boltzmann equation as a wild sum. They have many more terms in physics. Because we have a convolution, we are able to collapse a lot of those terms in the wild sum and write it in a very simple way. So the distribution of types at each point in time is just a mixture of n convolutions of the initial distribution of types mu zero, where the weights here in this mixture represent the fraction of the population at each point in time that has met directly or indirectly n minus one agents. So if we pick here n equals one, this term goes away. We have e to the minus lambda t. This is the fraction of agents in the population that has not met anyone up to time t. And if you pick n equals 4 here, you're going to have a term here that's going to be the weight assigned to the fourth convolution. So this weight is going to be the fraction of agents in the population that has met directly or indirectly three agents. Okay, so how do we prove this? It's a very simple proof. So we start with the Boltzmann equation, which is up there. We take the Fourier transform on both sides of the equation, and now we turn that potentially very complicated equation into a simple ODE in terms of the Fourier transform of the measure. Now that we have an ODE, we can solve explicitly for the Fourier transform of the measure mu t of types, and it's given by this form. So from here, we could have stopped because we have basically the Fourier transform of the distribution of types at each point in time. It would be very easy to invert numerically, but it turns out that you can actually invert this explicitly if we just expand this sum into a geometric series given here. And now we can invert back to get the wild sum that we have here. Okay, so this is for the simple model. Now we can start proving some properties about speed of convergence, for example. So here, by speed of convergence, we're looking at the mass. Suppose that the true state is y equals 1. So over time, because these agents are meeting, they're all converging to learning the truth. So they're all converging to a posterior of 1. However, it takes some time for that to happen. So we're looking at how quick this fraction that remains further away from 1, how quick that fraction goes to zero. This fraction is given by this term, how quick that goes to zero. We're going to show that it goes exponentially. And if we're able to bound on both sides by the same exponent here, alpha, we're going to say that the rate of convergence is zero. Oh, it's alpha, sorry. So we show here that in this model that convergence of the cross-section distribution of beliefs to that of complete information is exponential at the rate lambda. The proof is by just getting lower and upper bounds. The lower bound comes explicitly from the first term in the summation. The upper bound, we use a law of large deviations result using the moment generating function. We need to assume that the moment generating function is finite around the origin. There is an interval where this moment generating function is finite. If that is the case, then we can get the rate. So the moment generating function of the initial distribution of beliefs, just mu zero. We don't need to have any further conditions on mu t. Okay, and this is for types, and then we can move to posterior by just inverting the log likelihood ratio to posteriors by using this simple transformation. Now, this model can be generalizing that in many dimensions. So suppose that instead of two agents in a meeting, we have M agents participating in a meeting. The equation that we get is very similar, except that instead of a two-fold convolution, we have an M-fold convolution there in the second term on the right-hand side. But we can use the same approach to solve. We get an ODE now, an M degree ODE, but we still can solve it explicitly in terms of the Fourier transform and invert it back in terms of a wild sum where the weights now can be calculated recursively using this approach, but it's still a very tractable and easy formula. One curious result that we show is that independent of the group size M that participates in a meeting, the cross-section distribution of beliefs converge exponentially at the same rate lambda. So it doesn't matter if we have M agents or two agents participating in a meeting, that doesn't affect the rate of convergence, which is still lambda. I'm not going to have time to talk about the proof. So here is just some graphical examples about this simple model. So the blue bars are when we have groups of two agents meeting. This is a histogram. And the red bar is when we have groups of three agents meeting. So this is where they start. From here, you can already see that this is under the situation where y equals 1 because there's more weight on the right-hand side of this distribution, so above 0.5. But as time goes on, and this would be very similar to the price dispersion that you would observe in this market. So you start with a lot of price dispersion. Over time, agents are learning about what the true state is. So as you can see, there's going to be a mass accumulating in the upper parts of this distribution. And as you can see, the blue bar for two agents and the red bar for three agents. The red bar is higher, but if you look at the tail, it's very hard to see from this graph, but what the previous theorem shows is that this tail here, the mass that's in the tail here, converges at the same speed regardless of being two agents in an auction or three or any number M of agents in a particular auction. We can extend it even further by allowing information to come not only time zero, but over time. So agents may receive information over time according to some distribution, according to some probability measure nu. And the new information, the way we're modeling is that it's a Poisson arrival of new information for each of these agents. So they get the initial signals, but they also get new signals over time with some Poisson arrival rate rho. And the precision of those signals is distributed according to some measure nu. So this would be how the equation looks like. Instead of just removing a fraction lambda, we remove now a fraction lambda plus rho, because now we have to take into account that new signals are coming. A fraction lambda is replaced with just a convolution. A fraction rho is replaced with a convolution with this new measure, nu, which represents the precision of the new signals that are coming. The approach is the same to solve. We take Fourier transforms, and then we can solve explicitly for the distribution of types at each point in time, t. We expand this model also to public information release. So these are signals that everyone observes. So we can think about, in the market, Bloomberg terminal showing some codes for CDS. So everyone in the market can observe those codes, but they also have information from their private transactions with other agents. So this is taken into account in another paper. And we also look at endogenous search intensity. So here, agents are bumping into each other exogenously through this Poisson arrival process with Poisson intensity lambda, but we have a model in which they actually choose how much effort they want to put in finding a counterparty and choosing that lambda endogenously. We also extend this to segmented markets. So these are markets where, so in the previous model, what happens when I meet someone, the person is uniformly drawn from the rest of the population. In practice, we have a notion of network in place. So when I meet someone, I'm more likely to meet someone that is close to me or that I know of. So we can have this notion of neighborhood incorporated in the model. We have N classes of investors. Investors in each class can have different matching intensities. And when they meet, they can meet agents from a class J with some probability kappa ij. So through this kappa, I can make it more likely that I meet someone that is in my neighborhood or some neighborhood close to mine. So this allows flexibility in terms of modeling the structure of the market. Now we have a system of equations instead of just one equation. We have to keep track of the beliefs in each of these neighborhoods in the market. But the equations look very similar. We just replace some fraction lambda I with some convolution. The convolution now is with respect to not only the my own neighborhood measure, but the neighborhoods that I'm likely to meet. And the weights here are the kappas that I talked about in the previous slides. We can take Fourier transform and solve explicitly for a wild sum that is more complicated now, but it still can be solved in closed form. Okay, so let me talk in the remaining time about the double auction mechanism. So the way it's going to work is when two agents meet, so agents will have a particular utility function for the value of the assets that they are trading. So the asset is an asset that pays $1 if the state is indeed y equals 1 and pays 0 if the state is 0. And this is my utility function. So I have a value that I get from this asset if the state is 1 and a value VH that I get if the state is 0. It's important here that there are different utilities that heterogeneity in the population. Otherwise, no trade theorem would apply, and there would be no trade. There would be no trade. So we allow for VI there to depend on the class of agents. Okay, well, upon a meeting, there is going to be someone that has a higher VI, and this person is going to be the buyer, and another the counterparty will be the seller. The buyer will submit a bid beta. The seller will submit an ask sigma. If the buyer's bid is greater than the seller's ask, then there is trade, and the price at which they trade is going to be the seller's price. So we're giving bargaining power here to the seller. It's a take it or leave. You can think about it as a take it or leave offer from the seller to the buyer. So sellers and buyers, when they meet, they will be maximizing. They will be playing a game here. It's an auction game. So sellers maximize their profits, which is how much they get. So if they sell, which is indicator function for sigma less than beta, if they sell, they get sigma, which is the price at which they sell, minus what they expect, the utility that they lost from selling this asset, which is, and it's conditioned on the filtration FS of the seller at the time he enters the meeting, but also on the bid that the buyer submits beta. And for the buyer, it's just a mirror image of the above. So basically, all we need to show here is that the solution to this game, there exists an equilibrium in which these bidding strategies are strictly increasing in type. If that is the case, all the previous dynamics that we pointed out in the first part of the talk will hold. And what we do in the paper is to provide conditions under which this, the equilibrium of this game, that is, the bid of the buyer and the ask of the seller, is strictly increasing in types. It's a natural property to assume because the asset that they're transacting depends on the realization of Y, and they value the asset more the greater the type is, both for the seller and for the buyer. So it's a natural property to believe that the equilibrium will satisfy, but it takes some time to prove it, because the solution to this game is in the form of a differential equation. So we can characterize the bidding and ask, bid and ask, in the form of a differential equation. Now we have to show that they are strictly increasing. So we provide some conditions under which, on the primitives of the model, under which we can guarantee that these strategies are always strictly increasing in types, and therefore the dynamics that we pointed out, that we showed in the first part of the talk, will hold. Okay, so for more details, the paper is available on the web. I'm not going to go through all the technical details of the proof, because I want to talk about the third part, which is the value of information in this market. So what we study there is how valuable information is. So one initial idea is that it's always valuable to be informed here in this market, because it takes some time for the prices to incorporate information, so prices will trade very far away from the rational expectations equilibrium for some period of time. And if you're informed, if you know already where prices should be, you could make profits during that period of time. And that's what we show in the first proposition. So if trading is anonymous in this market, it is true that a more informed class will always get higher profits than a less informed class. Okay? So, and the idea here is, if trading is anonymous, I don't know who I'm dealing with. So I get the same, if I'm more informed or less informed, I get the same quotes from my counterparty. So I can really exploit my information to the max. So I could just, if, for example, I could just ignore my information and do as well as the less informed guys. So if trading is anonymous, I'm allowed to do that. However, if trading is not anonymous in this over-the-counter market, there is a trade-off. And the trade-off is between adverse selection and gains from trade. So the idea here is, if the counterparty knows that I'm very informed, the counterparty will be very conservative when bidding against me, because he knows that I want to buy exactly when the asset is worth a lot, and I want to sell when the asset is worth very little. So the counterparty will be very conservative because of this winner's curse problem. So the counterparty wants to avoid trading with me, because he knows that I win when the asset's worth a lot, and I sell when the asset's worth little. So he would lose money on average if he was not taking into account this winner's curse. Because this winner's curse is taken into account by the counterparty will bid very conservatively, and we can show examples in which a more informed or a more connected investor in this market actually achieve lower profits than a less informed or less connected investor. So information may actually hurt you if you cannot trade anonymously, if the counterparty knows who they're trading with, because then the winner's curse problem can become very severe and overcome the information advantage. We also show that we provide conditions under which this adverse selection is completely dominated. So if gains from trade are large enough, then the adverse selection problem becomes small, and being informed always helps in that case. Okay, so to conclude, we have what we did here was we had a tractable model of information diffusion in over-the-counter markets, so we are able to characterize explicitly the dynamics of evolution of beliefs in this market, of cross-sectional beliefs, and the dynamics of prices and price dispersion. So price will be very dispersed in the beginning. Over time, agents are learning about what the underlying state of the economy is, and these prices are going to become more and more concentrated around the rational expectations price, and they will converge to that price, which is... it's going to be, if the asset is one that pays one in the good state and zero in the bad state, it's going to convert to a price of one, which is how much this asset's worth. We also provide rates of convergence. So how fast do we converge to these rational expectation prices? And we show how these rates of convergence depend on different market structures. And we also study the value of information and connectivity in this market. So if trading is anonymous, information is always better, always helps in profiting. If trading is public, so if the investor class, if trading is transparent, if I know who I'm trading with, then information may actually hurt. So being more informed may lead to lower profits because of the adverse selection problem. That's it.